Hello, you're listening to StateScoop's Priorities Podcast. I'm Benjamin Freed, Technology Editor at StateScoop, sitting in for Colin Wood. This is a special episode about cybersecurity, and today we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to take a deep dive into the changing nature of cybersecurity leadership in the states. My guest today is going to be Tim Romer. He's been the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Arizona for a little over 2 years. But in April, he got a promotion when Governor Doug Ducey made him Arizona's Director of Homeland Security and moved cybersecurity to the state government's DHS. That decision made Arizona the second state, after New Jersey, to make cybersecurity a function of Homeland Security rather than the IT agency, which is the way it is for pretty much every other state. The basic idea is that cybersecurity touches much more than computers and networks. It encompasses all parts of government at this point. So it's a big step up for Romer. In addition to his cybersecurity duties, which he still has, he's now responsible for the state's border, counterterrorism, and disaster preparation programs. We talked a bit about all of that, as well as the broader authority and duties he has in this new role, including a new Arizona Cyber Center he opened this month. We also touch a bit on his past with the CIA and the National Security Council, his relationship with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at the federal level, and whether he thinks more states will follow Arizona's lead in moving cyber out of IT and into Homeland Security. So let's go to the interview.
So Tim, you earlier this year, you were, in addition to your CISA role, you were promoted to the statewide director of Homeland Security. So how's that been going so far, and how are you folding in your cybersecurity duties into the broader Homeland Security mission?
It's going fantastic. Obviously, a huge honor to be appointed by Governor Ducey and to be able to fill this role as director of the Department of Homeland Security, which is a role that I care passionately about. I had been the deputy for four of the previous years, and then I spent 2 years as the CISO. So now to be able to do both of them is a tremendous honor. And as Governor Ducey said, I'm a firm believer in this. Cybersecurity is Homeland Security, and we need people around the country to start focusing on that. And that needs to be the way that we tackle this issue. We need to understand that the threats are just as grave as many of the other public safety threats that we're faced with. One of the best reasons why this is going well is the governor's office allowed me to hire a deputy CISO. It was my first order of business. It's great government efficiency. In government, you only get paid for one of the jobs you do, but this combined two salaries, this combined cabinet level director's job and a CISO job. So that freed up one salary. I was able to hire a deputy CISO, and that deputy CISO is making my life a lot easier on me. His name's Ryan Murray. He's done an awesome job. And so that's the reason why it's probably going well so far, is having great deputies.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about that first idea, the fact that the idea of cybersecurity being part of Homeland Security. Now it's kind of done at the federal level. We have obviously DHS is in charge. The federal DHS is in charge of a big swath of the federal cybersecurity mission. At the state level, it's uncommon. It's you now and New Jersey, and I think that's it. So can you talk a bit more about how you made the pitch for blending the two?
Well, fortunately for me, I didn't have to make the pitch. The governor actually pitched me on it. His leadership is imperative in this, and it was really innovative and groundbreaking. The way he looked at it was, when he gets briefed on issues and when we are briefing him on cybersecurity, and then when my predecessor retired, he said that he was always wondering why such an important issue like cybersecurity was being run by more of an IT organization and less of a security organization, because he actually viewed it as a more of a security public safety threat. So he was more looking for those updates, on cyber attacks from like a Department of Public Safety, a Department of Emergency and Military Affairs, your National Guard. So he really envisioned that it would be better government efficiency to have this done. And he asked me to do it, which was awesome. And I was honored to be the right person for that job. As you mentioned, there's only one other state that does it this way, at New Jersey. But I think this is going to become more of the norm and not the anomaly as we move forward, as we continue to see threats to our critical infrastructure and other areas that we know would affect our public safety. I think leaders are going to start to realize that this cybersecurity function is best suited under a security agency.
Yeah. Is that because, you know, when we are dealing with, when we do have governments responding to cyber attacks, you know, it affects non, you know, it doesn't, is it because that affects, you know, non-IT areas? I mean, I'm just
yes.
You know, dig deeper into the thinking about, you know, why we're seeing the shift.
Right. And so that's exactly right. So when it comes to things like critical infrastructure, the cybersecurity side of it is so critical to that. So I love this new forward thinking that, and I have all the respect in the world, of course, for all my colleagues on the operations side, on the IT side. We can't do our jobs without them. And they're so imperative and they help us with so much. But at the end of the day, everybody within the industry has always said that cybersecurity experts, oftentimes to non-IT people or non-technology people, I should say, they're constantly thought of as like, oh, let's call the cybersecurity people. My computer isn't working, or I need to reset my password. Let me call cybersecurity. And you're thinking, no, it's not what cybersecurity professionals do. What cybersecurity professionals do, what your desktop IT support do, what other technology professionals do, totally different areas. And what makes a cybersecurity professional so imperative is that when we're dealing with the different types of threat actors, for example. So I like to group them into three buckets. You've got nation state actors, criminal hackers, and hacktivists. And when we're dealing with those, it shows you that you are up against criminals just the same way that the police are or that our federal partners are. And that in order to deal with them most effectively, we should be housed under a security agency. We should be working closer with law enforcement. We should be working with prosecutors. We should be working on intelligence and national security, partnering with our federal partners. So with that said, that was the deeper thinking. And if that's what you're doing in order to protect cybersecurity, then you should be under the roof of an agency and in closer partnership with those types of professionals. I will tell you that the opening of our cyber command center and moving our cyber team under our state fusion center is already helping us because we're under one roof as so many of those other critical partners that are working in this area to go after and thwart all the other threats that are out there.
Yeah. So now that this transition has happened, I'm wondering, you know, is there a certain percentage of your day you spend thinking about cybersecurity now that you have to balance it with things related to the border, counterterrorism, you know, critical infrastructure? Is it a balancing act sometime?
It is a balancing act. And I'm going to give you the first the political response, and I'm going to give you the honest response. The political response is 50-50, border security, cybersecurity. My honest response for everybody listening is it's more on the cybersecurity side. So let's go. I would even say 70% cybersecurity. And the reason is because the cybersecurity threats are so 24/7, 365, and I have the state statutory authority to be the chief information security officer for the state. There's a lot more of me and my team riding on protecting the state's networks. On the border security side, I do spend a significant time physically on the border. I go to the border, but on a daily basis, I'm more in an office setting. Border security strategy and policies and briefings and updates are always part of that. But man, the amount of attacks that are coming in on the cyber side are all day, every day, every instant. And that truly is taking up more of my time than the other areas. And it's tough because, you know, I need to make more time of my day for, you know, combating counterterrorism and those types of things as well, which are all part of the job. But to be really direct with you and answer your question, honestly and truthfully, cybersecurity takes up more of my time than any other issue.
Yeah. So you mentioned the cyber center. What's that going to do for your operation and for the state?
First off, is it provides us a facility that we didn't have before to just do our jobs on a daily basis, number one. It's tough when you really deal within this, you know, threat arena. And you do, at the end of the day, you need the facilities, the resources, to be able to respond on cyber. And so we needed our own operations center. We needed our own command center. We needed it in a secure environment as well, because we were always trying to have sensitive cybersecurity conversations, but we never had our own part of the building, for example. And that was not very good operational security. And so we were always looking to potentially move to an area that had better OPSEC. This facility allows us that. It's, first of all, it's in the State Fusion Center. Second, it is behind closed doors, badged access to get in. And then even within that facility, we still have a conference room that can be utilized for even more sensitive conversations. Or because it's in the State Fusion Center, we can move to the SCIF. So you can go to that secure compartmented information facility and have classified conversations with your colleagues from DHS INA or the FBI and others. That's really important, because what we're saying is that cybersecurity is homeland security, and that in order to do that mission well, we need to be in a facility that we can have those types of national security sensitive conversations that we couldn't have if we were working in any other department, you know, general departments, IT departments around the country. So it gives us a unique capability, the resources that we need, and it provides more space for us so we can surge in a cyber incident. We'll have more capacity to bring in additional resources and handle it from one operations center.
You know, it sounds like probably pretty comfortable, familiar territory for you. And thinking about your background before you came to work for the state of Arizona. You know, I know you spent some time working for the National Security Council. Is there anything about your background before Arizona that you think about when you're doing this job now?
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% spot on. You have definitely figured out in interviewing me in the past and reading my bio that it's no accident, it's no coincidence that Arizona was able to do this, because I really did want to accomplish this. Fortunately, I have a governor that really believes in me and my team, and he trusts us. And he told me when he appointed me that he was counting on me. I know he doesn't accept the status quo. And what we kind of had before was some facilities that were more of the status quo. And so I really wanted to push the envelope here and move forward. And I wanted to challenge our team to really be part of something bigger. And so, yes, there is a lot of me and my previous career kind of in this facility and this capability, but it was really the governor's vision to make cybersecurity a priority in our state that allowed me to accomplish that goal. And that's what I'm most thankful for. But I will tell you that despite my 10 years working in DC at CIA and then 2 years in the White House Situation Room, I know a lot about Operations Center. I know why they're valuable, and I know what we wanted to put into it. And that really did pave the way for us to really build one that I knew we could be proud of in Arizona, and to have one that would have the capabilities that we needed.
And I know one of the programs that you're gearing up is, I know you're kind of changing the name of to the Arizona ISAC. How is that going to change the way that you share that information between your Homeland Security agency, your other agencies?
So what we had rolled out before in the last couple of years is a program. So essentially the same mission function. It was an information sharing program that a lot of other states have. We called it ACIP, A-C-I-P, Arizona Cyber Information Program. The problem with that is, even when I explain it to you right now, it takes explaining. You have to explain to somebody what it is, what we're doing. That wasn't very marketable. There was no good way to build trust. And when you go to a city or a county or any other jurisdiction around the state, and you're trying to have them partner with you to share information in real time, to use our platform to automate this and to share intelligence and information so that we can better protect the state and all come together to learn from the cyber threats that are out there. When you have a name of a program that you need to explain, it doesn't give people a lot of confidence to partner with you. AZ ISAC is something that everybody knows what an ISAC is within the industry. Everybody's familiar with the great work of the MS ISAC. We talked with our partners in Oklahoma, actually, the OK ISAC, yeah. And they actually gave us the idea. They said, you know, it's a lot easier to get buy-in from people around the state when they know what you're doing, and the OK ISAC was a great way to do that. We loved that idea, and I hope it's flattering to them that we kind of stole that idea as well. as the AZ ISAC. And now that we have a Cyber Command Center to run a program like this out of, it builds trust from all those local municipalities that we want to partner with, because it shows them that we are for real, that we have the resources and capabilities, that we can be trusted, that it's worth their time and effort, and that we will deliver back on better protecting all of us if they partner with us on these programs.
Yeah, it's funny, man, you should mention Oklahoma. I actually talked to Matt Singleton earlier today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good timing. I've been really impressed by them. And that's why it's about partnerships. There's no organization that can handle cybersecurity on their own. That's just the way that it is. Cybersecurity is way too complex and it changes way too much every day. That's why our Cyber Command Center is so important. Bring more agencies together. Department of Homeland Security, at the state level, federal level, DPS, our National Guard, get us under one roof. We need to be partnering with our counterparts in other states, like we just mentioned, Oklahoma. I really value my relationship with the other 49 CISOs around the state. We need to share ideas and best practices. And what I learned, honestly, when I first came home after my 10-year CIA career, is I immediately learned that our public safety is a lot more local than I ever gave it credit for. And I realized that from the counterterrorism perspective immediately when I realized the Super Bowl was in town. Yeah. And I realized that in order to protect the Super Bowl in Arizona, we needed well-trained, well-resourced Arizona Department of Public Safety, Phoenix PD, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, all those local first responders we needed to protect us. Cyber is really no different than physical security. It's great to have the NSA and the FBI and our great federal partners, which I appreciate so much. But they'll be the first ones to admit to you, they're not going to be there to protect you, hold your hand, or respond to you to a cyber incident or help you prevent it from happening. They can help you with a lot of best practices, and they can share threat information and intelligence. And CISA is great about free resources. Those are all good things, but they're not going to monitor your networks for you. They're not going to hold your hands for you. We as locals, we have to do it. And in order to do that, we need the facilities necessary to kind of meet that demand and meet that challenge.
You've mentioned the partnering with the other agencies, partnering with the federal government a couple times. Certainly between the state and whether it's CISA or the FBI, how's that relationship these days?
Fantastic. I talked to my counterparts from around the country. I would put my relationship with my federal partners up against anyone's. And that's not to sound arrogant on my side. It's to compliment the great professionals that we have from the federal government working here in Arizona and how we've worked really closely together through the years. Now, I'm really lucky, though, because my predecessor, our former CISO for the state of Arizona, just so happens to be our cybersecurity advisor for CISA. So for FEMA Region 9, my good friend and colleague, Mike Lettman, who I replaced as our CISO, who I've worked really closely with. I've got a lot of respect for and a great relationship. He's phenomenal. I'm lucky that I have him, but he does a great job, and so does CISA headquarters. I've been really impressed by CISA headquarters, resources that they've put out there. They're doing a great job. Our local FBI field office here in Phoenix is first rate. They are always at the table with us. On a wide variety of different levels, but specifically on cyber. They're fantastic partners. Both FBI and CISA were at our ribbon cutting with the governor on Monday. And that speaks volumes to the relationship that they're right there sitting next to us for the biggest events, not just an emergency or anything else. It's about that partnership. And it's about that saying we say you can't be passing out business cards in an emergency. That needs to be done ahead of time. Very fortunate to have great federal partners here in Arizona.
And have you had a chance to speak with Director Easterly?
Not directly. She won't remember me, I'm sure, but I had the great luxury of working for the National Security Council when she was there. I was a White House Situation Room staffer from 2012 to 2014, was always very impressed by her. I haven't had any personal conversations with her since she's taken over CISA, but I applaud the president's appointment of her. She is fantastic. I don't know, it'd be hard to find anybody better than her to fill that spot. I love the way she thinks about cyber. I love how public she is talking about the cyber threat. She has an innovative kind of critical thinking process. And I continue to be impressed by her engagement and her thought process I think CISA is in really good hands with her, and the other 50, the 50 CISOs from another state, myself and the other 49, I think we're lucky to have a phenomenal partner with her at DHS, CISA headquarters.
Yeah. You know, you credited Governor Ducey a lot. Was there anything that he said initially that you know, indicated like this is the direction? This is the direction I think it should go in.
Yeah. So first off, talking with him about this, one of his biggest concerns is when we were briefing him and providing information on SolarWinds and then on Colonial Pipeline, it really got him to the point. And I know he was getting briefed by federal partners through the National Governors Association as well. This was keeping him up at night. This was concerning him. And so he saw it as the time for these types of changes need to happen now. I'll tell you what motivated me to really truly get that cyber command center is I've worked for him personally, and I know he doesn't accept the status quo. He wants innovative thought. He wants us pushing forward and trying for bigger things. That's why I knew that I needed to be the one to kind of spearhead that for the governor, because I knew what his direction was. I'll tell you specifically when he told me that he was counting on me, nothing like the governor of your state to kind of, I find that both motivating and kind of inspirational. But it really does put things into perspective that you better get something done. Like you need to take some responsibility and some action here. So what specifically he told me, I think when he told me he was counting on me, motivated me that I needed to really put my foot on the accelerator. And my team was just phenomenal because when I asked my team and I pushed my team and even on the Cyber Command Center, I kept telling them, it's got to be done by October. It's got to be done by October. That's a good timeline, and it's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. If we don't have a sense of urgency now, we're never going to get it done. We got it done by October 4th, just in the nick of time, you know, to meet that timeline that I put in front of them.
Yeah. So you said what was keeping him up at night. You know, this is like the ultimate, like, you know, default CISO question, but you know, what's keeping you up at night? Is that, you know, I mean, for years, everybody's answer has been ransomware. I'm wondering, you know, has that changed for you now with the bigger portfolio?
It has a little bit. So from the CISO perspective, sure. Ransomware, you know, scares all of us within the industry. And we need to do more to combat ransomware. Compliments to CISA. I love stopransomware.gov. I think it's a great resource. And I think, you know, a lot of us are following the playbook on how to combat this, but it's a very real threat and it could hit any one of us at any given time. I really worry about the exposure of data. I'm entrusted to protect the 7.5 million Arizonans data that we have at the state of Arizona. So what kind of keeps me up at night is ransomware will lock you out of it, you know, but you could always recover it or something. I don't know. I worry that somebody, you know, does something with the data to hurt a citizen or to affect a physical harm, you know, through some sort of attack here, whether it's critical infrastructure or something like that. And that kind of leads me out of the CISO hat and into my now director of Homeland Security hat in my experience at CIA. I started my career not too far, just a couple years after 9/11. So the counterterrorism side of the house, terrorism still keeps me up at night. Homegrown violent extremism specifically right now really, really makes me nervous. Yeah. That's starting to really affect me on a daily basis. And we're just working really hard to make sure we're getting every dollar we possibly can to the resources and training of our local law enforcement to be able to prevent and respond to acts of terrorism. And then we're also trying to put resources to the fact that we need to be on top of everything, intelligence, analysis, information sharing, partnerships. All of that is critical.
Yeah. You know, I think that's definitely one of the things where something that is, you know, a cybersecurity focus is not necessarily, you know, a strictly IT focus. Mentioning homegrown violent extremism, there's such a huge overlap there with, you know, rampant misinformation and disinformation that spreads online. Is that something that you can work to address?
Yeah, I think we can definitely play a role in that. But in order to tie all that together, I just like to say that I completely agree with the FBI director's comments several months ago, where he referred to the issue as cyber terrorism. I agree, it is cyber terrorism. And the governor and I have spoken publicly about that as well. And that's why it speaks volumes for why cybersecurity should be under a Homeland Security Department, because it is cyber terrorism. It has the ability to inflict a lot of harm on us and our citizens and our daily lives as well. We do play a critical role in all of that, including cutting down on the spread of misinformation, working to protect our elections, continuing to protect the integrity of our democracy. I've really enjoyed working with our Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, and her team, her cyber team here. We have a great partnership. We have for several years now. We don't just work on election security on election day. We work with them on best practices, grants, resources, information sharing. They know we're here for them. We're all one team in this. And I think this Cyber Command Center is going to help us on that front as well, because it gives us more capabilities that we can assist those other agencies and all those counties as well that might need help.
It's a big job. And I know you said you were telling your counterparts in other states, you know, this is the way it's going. Do you expect others to follow the model that you're trying to build?
I do. I think, you know, everybody needs the buy-in from their chief executives. So from their governors, they're going to need the resources to be able to, you know, kind of have these types of cyber command centers. But I think we can be the example in the model. You know, just to compliment my other 49 counterparts from around the country, they're phenomenal at what they do. You know, so I know they're doing great with the resources they have as well. And we're always sharing best practices. But I wouldn't be surprised that the way cybersecurity is going worldwide right now, that it's only a matter of time before more major cyber attacks happen. And unfortunately, some of them are going to succeed, and that's going to be difficult. But hopefully we all respond well and respond quickly to help mitigate the damage. But when those happen, that's going to drive more of this type of behavior. I'm fortunate to be in Arizona, where we're being really proactive on this. But I think some will start to take this model. Others, after something happens, it will continue to play more of a role. And very quickly, a quick example on that. One of the media outlets that didn't cover our cyber opening, so our local Fox station, Fox 10, and they're great, but they didn't cover our opening. Well, right at when the Facebook, you know, issues happened, that became a news story. And then they reached out and they came and actually interviewed me in my office and asked me later on that day about the Facebook issue and wanting to know more about that. That's a prime example that we're really reactive a lot of the times to what's happening. We need to be a lot more proactive in solutions to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, Facebook outage being DNS configuration thing.
Isn't it amazing, though, when that happens, though, everybody wants to talk about, you know, technology and cybersecurity. But, you know, a few hours before that, there were several people that thought, no, that's not any of my interests today. But it affects, you know, we've put our entire livelihoods on the backbone of technology, especially now post-pandemic. We've realized how much can get done with technology, whether you're going to telework instead of going into the office, you're going to order your takeout food, you're going to get curbside, you're going to get it delivered to your house, you're going to get your groceries delivered. Everything is on the backbone of technology, and we're so dependent upon it now more than ever. We need to start prioritizing the security side, not just the user-friendly side, customer service side, but the security side. We're entrusted to protect this information, and we need to prioritize that.
That's it for this episode of the State Scoop Priorities Podcast. My thanks again to Tim Romer. I'm Benjamin Freed. Colin Wood will be back next time. For more state and local government IT news, go to statescoop.com. Thanks for listening.